This is a recording of the audit hearing held by the Federal Election Commission on August 31st, 2011. Should you have questions after listening to the recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Good morning. The Federal Election Commission will come to order. Today we have an oral hearing on the Chris Dodd for President audit. It is Wednesday, August 31st. Welcome, everyone. And we have appearing before us on behalf of the committee, Mr. Swoboda and Mr. Burkhan. This hearing procedure is a fairly new procedure at the Commission. What we do is provide the counsel for the committee with an opportunity to make some introductory or opening remarks, and then commissioners will have an opportunity to ask any questions. This is an opportunity for the committee's counsel to directly provide information and argument directly to the commissioners as we consider the later stages of an audit. So welcome, everyone, and Mr. Swoboda, please proceed when you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to thank the Commission for their time today. I hope not to take up too much of it. I'd also like to thank the auditors for their work, even though we disagree with some aspects of it. I'd like to say it's always sad when they leave our offices, but but we have mixed emotions. We're here to talk today just about three things. None pertains actually to the amount of repayment that the committee is suggested to owe. Each pertains to the committee's compliance with the provision of the Act. And so that's our purpose for being here today. We realize that this is not necessarily the last time a committee would talk to you about these things, so we thought it more efficient to talk to you about them now to try to resolve these issues. And the three issues we wanted to talk about were first, the bus. The second is the committee's disposition of its general election contributions. And the third was the committee's reporting with respect to the brokerage account in which it kept those same contributions. With respect to the bus, the assertion of the draft final audit report is the committee received a prohibited contribution from the International Association of Firefighters. As we've provided in our correspondence with the auditors and as indicated in the record before the commission, the Firefighters Union initially had purchased a bus to use to transport its members, and its PAC had paid for a bus wrap to wrap that same bus to promote the senator's candidacy. And of course, in Iowa, when a big bus with Chris Dodd's name on it is traveling down Interstate 80, one cannot help but notice, and it came to the committee's attention that there was such a bus and that we would like to have access to it. And so the union agreed that the committee could have access to it, and it sent us an invoice directing us to pay its PAC for the appropriate portion of the bus. And there's some important things, I think, to understand about the bus here. The first is, you know, however the payment occurred on the union and PAC end with respect to its different ingredients, to which we obviously were not privy, what the committee acquired was a wrapped bus. Had the committee wished to rent a bus, we could have gone to Greyhound, we could have gone to Trailways, we could have gone to Avis, but in fact, the value to the committee was having a bus that was functioning as a form of advertising for us, and so we paid for that unified bus. The second was that the committee was asked to pay the PAC, and the committee indeed ultimately paid the PAC. We paid whom we were asked to pay, and in fact, we chose to pay in abundance when we ultimately did, because we wished to avoid any question as to whether we underpaid for the bus. It's important to understand that the committee only made a partial use of the bus relative to its lifetime and its traveling up and down the roads of Iowa. We only used it for a partial portion of the period in which it was in service, and so there may have been an argument that we could have paid, you know, on some sort of prorated basis, but we chose to decide not to do that because we wish not to have to face that question. And the third was that the committee and the PAC were both transparent about the debt owed and the debt receivable throughout the time. And one of the things we would take some issue with, both in the final audit report and in the agenda document that was circulated yesterday, was the suggestion that somehow the committee, you know, was not prevailed upon to pay this obligation or somehow did not want to pay this obligation until the auditors brought it to their attention. As you can see, for example, from footnote 2 of the general counsel's memorandum that reviewed the draft final audit report, both the committee and the PAC disclosed the debts all along. So this was not a case where the committee was trying to sweep anything under the rug or, for that matter, the PAC. So our argument at bottom with respect to the bus is that the committee paid whom it was asked to pay. Would we have preferred to pay sooner? Certainly. We would have preferred to pay sooner. And I think it's also clear from the evidence in the audit record that the committee was in a debt situation when the senator withdrew from the campaign, that we had many obligations and that we were trying to meet those obligations, you know, all of which, by the way, I mean, relate, you know, our, you know, share equal urgency, you know, under the Act. But that's the position with the bus, which was that we paid whom we were asked to pay and we acted reasonably as we could under the circumstances. The second issue, yes.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thanks. I thought it might be more efficient if I just asked you my bus questions while you're on a roll on the bus, so to speak. I understand you got the invoice from the PAC and you paid the PAC. Is it your position that was all you knew about it? That it might actually have been paid for by the union itself as opposed to the PAC, or you just figured that was their internal accounting and you just, if they billed you from the PAC, you assumed that's who paid for it?
Well, we were aware, or at least understood, and I think we said this in our response to the interim audit report, that the union in the first instance had paid for the bus proper and that the PAC in the first instance had paid for the wrap on the bus. That was our understanding, and I believe that's reflected in our response to the draft audit report. In terms of navigating payment, I mean, our position was we wished to pay whom we were directed to pay. The second issue that we wish to talk about just very briefly is the issue of excessive contributions.
If we're going to stay on the bus thing, we can do that or can come back. What was your pleasure?
I'm happy to answer any question any of you have about anything.
Maybe just go ahead with everything, and then we can go back to all these various ones, I guess.
Yes, I'll wait for the leave of the commission before I leave the bus and move to the contributions.
Perhaps we could hear your entire opening, and then commissioners could ask their questions about all three topics and provide you with an opportunity to give us your entire argument first.
I'm glad to do that as well. With respect to excessive contributions, what we're here to talk about today are the contributions that we received for the general election campaign and that we were required to redesignate or refund, or perhaps to put it more precisely, permitted to redesignate under the advisory opinion that the commission gave to the campaign in September of 2008. There seems to be no dispute, if I read the agenda document from yesterday anymore, as to whether the committee has actually disposed of the general election contributions, whether by redesignation or refund. And there seems to be no dispute that we obtained timely redesignations for those contributions that were redesignated, and we issued timely refunds for those contributions that we were required to refund. The issue that seems to be on the table is whether, because a large number of those refund checks remained stale dated when the auditors continued their review of the bank accounts, whether the committee had somehow adequately disposed of the contributions. And as the draft report is written now, it suggested that we didn't. We would take issue with that. I mean, with respect to these contributions, we did what the regulations required us to do. We timely obtained redesignations, and we timely issued refunds. The fact that those refund checks were not cashed later and required a disgorgement to the Treasury is something that the committee did in the normal course, as any committee would do when it's audited. I mean, what will happen during the audit, as the commissioners well know, is the auditors will review the bank statements, they'll see what's cleared the bank and what hasn't, and at the end of the day, they'll ask the committee to square its accounts so they can be rid of the money that it's not supposed to have, and so the committee can terminate its activities. And that's what we did. But there's no suggestion at all in the draft final audit report or in the interim report that with respect to these contributions, or I shouldn't say that with respect to the interim report, but at this stage, there's no suggestion that the committee at all did not somehow timely obtain written redesignations or issue the refunds for these contributions. There was some dispute earlier in the audit, and I won't go into detail about this, but there was some dispute earlier in the audit over whether how to determine which contributions were redesignated and which ultimately were transferred to the committee. But that seems to be not before the commission at present. The issue before the commission is whether we properly disposed of these contributions, in our position is that we did. And the last issue which we wish to talk about was the issue of the committee's brokerage account. And here, on behalf of the committee, I will confess to an error. The committee chose to invest its funds in the market in the beginning of 2008 before a historic market downturn. And so things financially did not go well for this account. This account maintained first with Smith Barney and later with Morgan Stanley, in which the committee maintained its general election contributions. That's what the committee did. It took its general election contributions segregated them and maintained in this brokerage account. And what we are left with at this point is a finding that the committee materially misstated its receipts because it failed to disclose the realized losses from the brokerage account. The problem with this is that there's a number of different problems with this. The first is there's no clear guidance, not in the statute, not in the regulations, not in the advisory opinions, of what the committee is in fact supposed to do with realized losses. And in fact, in terms of receipts, I mean, there is an argument based on the text of the regulation that the committee is not required to itemize the realized loss at all, because to the extent it's characterizable as a receipt, it's never a receipt in excess of $200. It is always a receipt that is less than zero, a negative number. But in any event, it's not a subject that the regulation or the statute talks about at all. It's also not a subject on which the Commission seems as yet to have reached agreement on at all. So the position that the auditors have taken in this audit is that these realized losses are properly disclosable as negative receipts, and that position is supported as well by the campaign guide. But the position that the General Counsel took in the analysis of the final audit report, which seems to be the same as the position that the auditors initially took in the Wiener audit, was that they're properly disclosed as disbursements. And last, from the agenda document yesterday, we are told by the audit division that we can still comply with the recommendation as to the misstatement of receipts if we comply with the General Counsel's alternative position and disclose these as disbursements. But that causes us to wonder how exactly that works. If we have a misstatement of receipts, then how do we correct that by basically not changing our receipts at all, but rather making disbursements? So from where we sit, I mean, obviously there's confusion in terms of how, you know, brokerage losses particularly are supposed to be dealt with, and certainly we and the Commission seem to have been confused as much as anybody may be, and we're certainly open to doing whatever needs to be done to correct the public record, but we don't wish to be in a position where we're tacitly admitting a violation of the law on this point. And that's the sole reason why we haven't complied with the auditor's recommendation with respect to the disclosure of the brokerage activity. It is not because it's information that we don't want people to see. It's not because we have any anxiety about sharing that information. We simply don't want to be before the Commission a year from now or a year and a half now saying, well, you tacitly admitted that you violated the law because you conformed with the auditor's recommendations. So those are the reasons we're here today. We do appreciate the Commission's time, and I am happy to answer any questions the Commissioners have.
Thank you, Mr. Sorba. Questions from Commissioners? Commissioner Walther?
The issue that came up is, as from my understanding your argument, that you really only were using that as a promotional expense and not for a transportation expense. Is that right, on the bus? You weren't really seeking to rent it to transport people, that's what you're saying, but rather to take advantage of the wrap.
I think it's clear that our primary purpose was to advertise
the bus.
I don't wish to mislead the Commission and say that nobody ever rode the bus or got from point A to point B on the bus. That's not what we wish to argue. But, I mean, there's no question that the attractiveness of the bus to us was as a promotional tool.
But the amount that the PAC paid is like $14,000?
I believe that's correct.
And then, but you paid him $32.
Yes, that's correct.
And what was the difference for?
We wished, the committee made the judgment that we wished to pay the aggregate, the cost of the of all the costs associated with the bus.
So not just the wrap, including the transportation part or whatever, the use of the bus as well as the use of the wrap.
Correct. And we did this for prudential reasons. We wished not to avoid the suggestion that we somehow underpaid.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So on the bus, basically you didn't pay for it as soon as possible because you didn't have the money. And when you had the money, you basically overpaid for it to make sure there wouldn't be any question about it. Am I getting that right?
That's correct, although I think we always assumed that we would err on the side of overpayment from the beginning of the process, and I think the reports, the disclosures of the debts would bear that out.
And so when you had the money to pay it, you paid it, and in a way that you hoped would put aside any potential of being questioned, but obviously you were wrong on that. On the On the $7,000 versus the $244,000 that are written about in the report, I'm trying to figure out whether this is a substantive dispute or a drafting problem. Is it that we've buried the lead in the report by saying there's this $244,000 out there, and then you read further and you eventually get to the part where it says, but only $7,000 remains unresolved? Is the problem that we don't kind of lead with the $7,000 that remains unresolved and the here's how we got to the $7,000, or is there a substantive dispute over how the funds are characterized?
Well, I think what you're Do you know what I'm saying? I do. I think what you're seeing in the way the draft final report is now drafted is a legacy of an earlier dispute between us and the auditors about identifying the contributions that had been transferred to the Senate committee. And I think if you look at the general counsel's memorandum commenting on the draft final audit report, you'll see some repeated discussion of that. As near as we can tell, and this was very confusing to us at the time, but as near as we can tell, the auditors were trying to determine which funds had been redesignated and transferred to the Senate campaign. And what they seem to have done was to use an accounting method by taking the refunds that were issued, the other cash events that occurred in the brokerage account, and then dealing with what is left using an accounting method to try to identify what was left and, in their judgment, had not been appropriately redesignated and transferred to the Senate campaign. And so you see that, for example, in the schedules provided with the exit conference and in the preliminary audit report. But when we saw those schedules and we looked at the contributions that comprised the $244,050 that comprised that, we saw that for a large number of them, for $74,800 of them, we actually had written redesignations. That for $144,950 of them, we had issued refunds, although they had yet to clear the bank. And for $7,300, we had issued refunds and they'd yet to clear. And with respect to one contribution for $2,100 that had been issued and had bounced, it was an NSF check. So that was when we went back in our response to the preliminary audit report and said, you know, something's not right here. How is it that you're contending that there's no written that we didn't timely redesignate this money when we actually have the redesignations? So what I think what you're seeing is kind of a legacy, you know, of that. But we would like to avoid, you know, the suggestion that we somehow failed to appropriately dispose of these contributions at all. And that's where we are. That's where we are today.
And you timely handled the redesignation letters on the bulk of these, if not all of them, but there was a fairly large chunk where people just didn't cash the checks.
Correct. I mean, so two universes of contributions, those for which we obtained written redesignations and those for which we issued refunds, right. Either because they couldn't be redesignated or because they did not provide us timely with the written redesignations. And the refunds were issued timely. There was a large chunk of those where they didn't clear the bank. And I don't know why that is. I mean, fundamentally, we're talking about people who gave significant amounts to the campaign, you know, so perhaps they're not as eager as you or I, you know, to cash the check that comes in, or maybe they're more eager. I don't know. But at bottom, I mean, there's no dispute at this point that we issued the checks timely.
So I guess from your perspective, if I'm understanding this, you feel like the campaign did everything that it was supposed to do, and at that point, you know, whether people deposit the checks or not is kind of out of your hands, and you don't want to be tagged for having violated the law as a result of that.
That's correct.
Okay. Just want to make sure I'm understanding what's going on here. Okay, thanks.
Commissioner McGann.
Thank you. You sort of skipped over it because I guess it's not technically before us, but the history of this audit is somewhat interesting, and I think something that Commissioner Weintraub said got me thinking just recently. Is this a writing job, or is there a substantive dispute? There's kind of both, and it seems like the longer this audit goes on and the more questions you asked, the substance peeled away and we are left with more of a writing job. But there is a history here with the audit, and it seems to me that a lot of the tension is the auditors went down one road that maybe wasn't really the right road legally or for whatever reason. Now they have to, well, bad pun, but back the bus up and then go down another road. And you see an audit report where really we're not sure what road we're on, and there's a lot of language that seems to come from old fights that seem to have been resolved. And that seems to be the concern with what some of what you're saying, right, is that at the end of the day, the audit kind of brands you potentially of having broken rules that you really didn't break, or it seems to have hinted that you may have done something wrong when you didn't. Am I on the right page here? Is that there's much more of a history than what we have before us, right? There's a lot of little fights that were fought along the way that seem to still be percolating in the audit report.
Well, I don't wish to throw the auditors under the bus here, but they're... I think there were two issues where we had some substantive disagreement that has thrashed its way out during the audit process, and both I think pertained to the brokerage account. The first was what was the level of disclosure that was required for the brokerage account, where the initial position, as we understood it, was that we should have included the fluctuations of value realized or not, including unrealized value, in our accounting and on our reports. And, of course, that was the position that was advanced during the Wiener audit that the Commission ultimately, you know, did not accept. And I think the second issue was, difficulty that the auditors perceived in trying to identify, you know, what funds were actually transferred to the Senate committee because of the decline in the value of the brokerage account. Because bear in mind, we received our advisory opinion from the Commission in September 2008, and then the world economy crashed in October of 2008. I mean, so the market position of
that wasn't our fault, really.
It was indeed not. It was Congress's fault because you had no quorum for such a long period of time. But I think there was the difficulty in trying to figure out, you know, how you account for that transfer of funds in that first instance. But what we tried to submit all along was that, you know, from where we sat, our regulatory obligations were clear. We had a statute that was basically, you know, or a regulation 102.9 that allowed us to accept general election contributions and required us to dispose of them so that the presidential campaign would not receive a prohibited contribution. So the issue was making sure that the presidential campaign was not unjustly enriched by the money that Chris Dodd was raising for the general election in which he ultimately didn't run. And there seemed to have been no dispute that we met that objective in disposing of our money, that we refunded what we needed to refund, we redesignated what we needed to redesignate. So in fairness to the auditors, I think there was some confusion in dealing with the brokerage account issues, and we were certainly confused too, but I think you do see, you know, some legacies of that in the draft final audit report.
So you're, on that issue, you're probably happy reporting it however we decide you ought to report it, but you don't want to be tagged with having done it incorrectly or somehow have it in an audit report that there's a finding that the Dodd campaign broke the law in some form on a reporting issue when you have multiple views on how you're supposed to report this kind of loss, right? Because originally it was the fluctuations were an issue. That's no longer an issue, right? We don't have to report fluctuations. It's not until it's realized. Now, you did sell some stuff, as I take it, and then that has to be reported somehow. But your guess is as good as mine on how that's supposed to be reported, and that's what we really need to decide. But you just don't want us to also say, now that we've decided how you're going to report it,
we haven't decided.
We tagged you for... Right?
That's correct. If we have a final audit report that says that the committee misstated its reports in this way, then somebody with interests opposed to us, unlikely at this point since the senators left public life, you know, could say, you filed false reports. And we emphatically do not want to be in that situation, and we don't think it's justified here.
If I could ask about the bus, just so I'm clear on the facts. The PAC had paid for the wrap, and the union had paid for the, I guess, the bus rental. Is that?
That's my understanding.
Okay. And because your client was interested in really the shrink wrap bus, you can get a bus anywhere else. You didn't really need a bus. You needed a billboard that could drive around. You got the invoice from the PAC. That seems pretty reasonable to me that that's where the invoice would come from, because it was really the shrink wrap that was the special thing that you needed to pay for, right?
Well, to be clear, and the auditors do mention this in the draft final report, the invoice was issued by the union, but it directed us to pay the union's PAC. And I don't know why it was issued in that way and from that source. I assume it's because the PAC is the separate segregated fund of the union and that it was part of their administrative activities.
Do you recall how long did it take for you to get the invoice? What's the timing of this?
I don't recall the date on which the committee received the invoice, but I do believe that it was that it was contemporaneous. I mean, that it was very prompt.
Okay.
And I know I do recall from my review of the documents that both the PAC and the committee began disclosing debts on our side and payables on their side, beginning with the March report, the March 2008 report.
Thank you.
So all of this occurred contemporaneously with the caucuses, which, of course, were in, I believe, late December.
Mr. Swoboda, the report says that the committee was billed on February 12, 2008. Does that sound about right?
I wouldn't dispute that.
Commissioner Walther?
Assuming we're talking about commercially reasonable, were you in a debt situation from day one all the way through? From I guess you had to. It says it was due on March 4th of 08, $32,000. You paid $32,000. But during that whole period, were you in a debt situation? Or did you let them know? Or did you ask for an extension? Or was there anything, any communication on, hey, we're going to pay as soon as we can?
I'm not aware that there was back and forth with them about this, and I don't know the date on which the committee, you know, was in the black, as it were.
Yeah.
I do know that it did take the committee some time generally to pay off a number of its debts.
Sure. The I guess one of the questions I had is it said here the committee has not provided any documentation verifying the actual transfer of these contributions, and then it leaves it hanging down here. It appears that they have not yet transferred this amount. What's that all about? In other words, isn't that something that's verifiable on a telephone call?
What that's about is if I understand correctly, is the manner in which the committee transferred the funds in the brokerage account to the Senate campaign. And the issue there was that the senator used the same broker for both accounts. I mean, Smith Barney managed the brokerage account for the presidential campaign's general election contributions and also managed a brokerage account for the for the Senate campaign. And so obviously it would have been inefficient for the presidential campaign to sell all its assets at what it was worth at that particular moment and then transfer a bunch of cash to another Smith Barney account. You would have had, then you would have had significant losses and a really inefficient use of committee funds. So what the broker did was he made the transfer by journal entry. They did it basically on the back end of the books, you know, at Smith Barney, and that's how the transfer occurred. And I think that goes to Commissioner McGann's question about, you know, why do we still have this language here in the report? And our guess is that that's still a legacy of that issue that the auditors have, which is, you know, whether it was done by journal entry, how do we know that it, in fact, you know, was done?
But I guess the question for me is here we are, and you're all gathered here together. We've asked you to come down, come before the commission, and this seems like such a simple thing that could be resolved that shouldn't have to be before us, that says it appears that they have not transferred the amount. Doesn't that have you transferred it?
We have. Well,
I mean, so why is this even an issue here? Why isn't there a communication between audit and you rather than have it come and appear to us that there's a problem with it?
Well,
I guess that's my concern. When you saw that, wasn't it obvious to you that the transfer had occurred?
Commissioner, I mean, from where we sit, it was. And if I think if you see our response to the exit conference and the preliminary audit report and then to the draft final audit report, I mean, you'll see us, you know, making those that very argument.
So what would it take to make our audit staff happy to be convinced that it has occurred? Because right now, as we're receiving this yesterday, they weren't comfortable that the transfer had taken place. What do we need to do?
I can't answer that, Commissioner.
What do we need to do? Is it still an issue or what?
I don't think that there's any suggestion that the presidential committee continues to retain the funds. I think the record is clear, and I think the general counsel's memorandum on the draft final audit report makes clear that there's no longer an issue with respect to excessive contributions with respect to the presidential campaign because of those funds.
On the other issue of reporting receipts, it says our campaign guide states that the investment income received or lost, and I assume you're interpreting that to mean until it's realized, it's not received or lost, and that's you're talking about what's realized and what's not. and the audit is telling you to report unrealized gains or losses on the theory that that's a stable amount, or how does that?
I don't think that that's the current stage of the dispute. The initial position taken by the auditors, as we understood it, was that we needed to report based on an unrealized basis, right, the fair market value of the account, okay, you know, as of the close of books on the report. Right. Later it was contended, and I think you see this in the preliminary audit report and the draft final audit report, that we ought to have disclosed the net realized losses. And
the net realized losses.
Correct. And that's what we're here disputing today, that while you can look at the advisory opinions and find authority, you know, for disclosure of gains, there's no clear authority for disclosure of realized losses.
Right.
Commissioner McGann.
I think in the procedure for this hearing, I'm allowed to ask the auditors a question.
Yes, the procedure says that the audit staff, commissioners have the opportunity to pose questions to the audit committee, and commissioners may ask questions designed to elicit clarification from the Office of General Counsel or the Office of the Staff Director.
Great. I think it would save us time. I essentially want to swing Commissioner Walter's question your way, because there is a sense that, at least with some of this, it seems like there's a lot to do over not a lot. And I know the audit manager is not here today; he's on vacation. So maybe that's the guy who ultimately answers. But I'm kind of curious, because it seems like some of this stuff kind of goes back to my previous observation. Some of this seems like a vestige of fights that are already water under the bridge, and I'm not sure if some folks are just sort of hanging on to the past here, or there's still some real disagreement.
Mr. Hintermeister?
I agree. I mean, I can talk with the manager and see what documentation is still required in this particular instance, and we can certainly talk with Brian and work something out as far as what documentation we need to satisfy whatever is needed to resolve the matter. If it is just a documentation type of thing, that's the type of area where there should be a lot of communication between the audit staff and the committee to get what is needed to make decisions.
Not sure it's just a documentation thing, though. Council have any thoughts on that?
Well, we have talked with the audit division, I mean, extensively over the past year or 2 years, you know, about this issue. And I think what's at bottom is a question, you know, with the auditor's satisfaction for understanding the brokerage account and how to value the assets, you know, that were ultimately transferred by journal entry from the Senate campaign, or from the presidential campaign to the Senate campaign. So we're certainly willing to talk with the auditors and understand, you know, where they're thinking as on that point, you know, at this point. But, you know,
you've already done a lot of talking, probably by the hour, to your client. I mean, you've already endured a lot of expense here. And I think at a certain point, I'm just scratching my head, sort of to paraphrase Admiral James Bond Stockdale, who am I and why am I here, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we're going to vote on an audit report at the final stage. The language needs to reflect reality and need to be something that enough commissioners are comfortable with. So at the end of the day, this whole exercise is to help us know what should be in the audit report. Right. And it seems like some of this stuff in the audit report is just doesn't need to be there, or it could be clarified, or there seems to be that there ought to be a way that we shouldn't have gotten this far. And that's not to you. That's somewhere between you and somewhere on the dais.
I wonder,
Commissioner Walther,
on this issue of what's unreasonable, and I don't, I'm not sure exactly the parameters, but it just doesn't seem right that every time you're in a debt position and you're trying to work it out, that all of a sudden You're being potentially charged with an unreasonable return when it's reasonable in all sorts of business transactions that people try and work out their debts as best they can and get things paid as best they can, and nobody's suing anybody. And so I mean, here we are talking about $14,000 over this thing that got overpaid, and now being potentially charged for writing it up for being, you know, too late. I'm just wondering if I think I'd share the opinion of Commissioner McGann that some of this seems like it could have gotten worked out earlier. The even down at the last minute, the last sentence of this report says the audit staff would not object to the committee's reporting of net realized losses, investment losses as another disbursement, as suggested by the Office of General Counsel's legal. And if he were to amend it to reflect net realized losses as other disbursement, the audit staff would conclude he had materially corrected the misstatement. How do you think about that? Is that something you can go along with?
Well, Commissioner, I mean,
these things seem like they could get worked out in a conversation rather than pull us all together here to do this.
Commissioner, I think the answer to that is yes, so long as the committee is not making an admission against interest by doing that.
Sure.
I mean, so our only issues with amending consistent with that last sentence of the memorandum would be, you know, number one, I mean, we don't want to be making a tacit admission that we somehow, you know, misreported all along. And number two, there's, as I pointed out earlier, there's a logical disconnect between what they're proposing to do there and what we've and what the finding is at bottom. I mean, the finding is that we misstated our receipts, but they have proposed to correct that finding of misstated receipts by saying just reported as disbursements. That doesn't make sense. I mean, I'm glad to do that if that's what the commission prefers that we do and if they think the public record is best served by that, but I don't wish to do it in a fashion that somehow you know, admits that my committee, you know, acted wrongly, you know, through misreporting.
Then how do you suggest it be entered?
Commissioner,
maybe that's really what you should all be talking about, and not asking us to decide that. But it should be resolvable.
Yeah. Commissioner, I think it depends on how the commission elects to draft the final audit report and what it ultimately, you know, does with that issue later. I mean, we would be pleased to provide whatever level of disclosure that the commission wants, you know, as long as it's not used as a club against us later in an enforcement process.
Commissioner McGann.
Back to my point, though, at some point we have to actually vote on an audit report, and I understand you don't want to overstep your bounds because it's ultimately the commission's decision, but I want to rephrase Commissioner Walter's question. You have counsel with one view, auditors have another view, how to report this. You know the facts better than certainly I do because this is your case. So let me ask the same question. How should this be reported? And I'm asking this because losses in investment accounts don't happen every day because a lot of campaigns don't have enough money to put in investments, and there hasn't been this kind of historic loss like you had at this time period. So this really hasn't come up much. So if someone asks me how to report this, I have no idea. So given the fact you know the factual record, what do you think actually will let the public know what they need to know about what happened here? Basically, which way do you want to go?
Right.
Council's report or audit, we're not going to brand you. I'm not going to brand you, but at some point you have to report it. So help us out here.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it goes from where we sit. I think it goes basically to, you know, understanding the transaction in the broader sense, which was this was an account where we segregated our general election contributions. We received a finite number of general election contributions, and we ultimately had to dispose of them as the law required. And the Senate campaign reported a receipt of those contributions. So I think what the committee would prefer to do in this instance is look at the basis value of the account, which is what was the amount of general contributions that we received, and insofar as we preserved them, you know, and did not otherwise spend them by refunding them to donors as we were required to do, then how was the account adjusted from there? I mean, I think that's how the committee has disclosed this activity to date, and I think would prefer to continue to do so. I don't think that there's legal authority to require the committee to disclose realized losses on the brokerage account. I can see how an argument can be made based on the advisory opinions that there may be such an ability to require that with realized gains, but with realized losses, I don't see that same argument. And then the problem you have with that is if you're requiring the disclosure of realized gains but not requiring the disclosure of realized losses, then you really are misstating the committee's financial position. You're truly distorting it. So I think what's going to leave the public in this instance, you know, best informed is to regard the brokerage account as where the general election contributions were escrowed and kept, you know, except to the extent that they were refunded.
Thank you.
Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There's an issue that I thought I had some understanding on, and as I've been listening to the discussion, I realize there's still some confusion, at least in my own mind. And it relates to footnotes 10 and 11 on pages 13 and 14 of the count, and this is the issue of the transfer. I'll start with footnote 11 first, where it says there are contributions of $173,210, which constitutes $74,800, which is talked about in bullet A of that page, that those were you received redesignation, and $98,410, which is referenced in footnote 10 as being an amount where redesignation letters were obtained, but there were insufficient funds to make those transfers to Friends of Chris Dodd. But again, there are contributions of $173,210 for which CDFP provided redesignation letters but has not transferred to Friends of Chris Dodd. Provide for me a little more clarification on what the subject of this dispute really is. I'd assume that this related to the brokerage account, but if you could provide a little bit more understanding to me. Again, I thought I knew where this was going, and now I have a little more confusion in my mind about what the subject of this dispute is.
I think, Commissioner, it goes down to the question of the brokerage account. It's all about what the value of the brokerage account was when the committee or when the committee's broker made the journal entry to move the funds to the campaign. And I think that was the source of the original dispute that we had in the auditors with this process, which is how do you identify those funds that were transferred over and how do you basically prove to their satisfaction that transfer occurred? I mean, from where we sat, we thought, that we had understood that we had issued the refunds for that which we were required to refund, we had obtained the redesignations for that which we were allowed to redesignate, and we were able to transfer by journal entry the funds, net of refund, that we were able, to do. But I think what you see there is that, confusion regarding, how you actually look at the value of what happened to the brokerage account, particularly given, that it was down significantly in terms of market value in October of 2008. I think that's the problem.
Okay. So to follow up on a question that was asked by Commissioner Walther, this isn't a case of you obtained redesignation letters and then money just sat in the presidential account and was never transferred. This does relate back to the brokerage account.
There was a dispute earlier in the audit as to whether we had timely transferred the money for which redesignations were sought. The auditors had contended that we didn't, and we replied, I think you'll see this in the response to the preliminary audit report, that we're required to have the redesignation letters by date 60. That doesn't mean we're required to transfer the money by date 60. I could, for example, get Mr. Burkhan's redesignation letter at 11:59 on day 60, and I don't break the law because I don't transfer the money until 12:01 the next morning. So that was an issue that came up earlier in the audit, and we responded to that, and that is no longer an issue in the audit, as near as I can tell from the draft final audit report and the memorandum I saw yesterday.
Okay. Thanks for that clarification.
Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Sort of along the same lines, I don't think this issue is really – I think this issue may have been resolved at an earlier point, but I'm just trying to get clarification in my own mind. So everyone who sought a refund got a refund?
You mean if you affirmatively requested a refund as
yes.
an alternative to redesignation?
Yes.
I believe that's so.
What I'm asking is who bore the loss of the, when the brokerage count went south? If everyone who had contributed money to that account had asked for a refund, they wouldn't be able to get it because you no longer had that money because
right.
the account went down. So what I think happened, and that's what I'm seeking clarification of, is to the extent that people wanted their money back, they were able to get their money back. To the extent that they said just, we're happy to redesignate it to the Senate campaign, basically it's the Senate campaign that bore the loss because that's where the, there may not have been as much money to transfer. Am I understanding that?
Well, that's right, but with one catch. I mean, with the market, what goes down comes up.
Right.
And so, and then again, that was part of the reason why the transfer was made by journal entry, so that
right.
the fair market value of the stock could, in fact, recover.
Right.
But no, that did not impact the
Didn't
committee's
impact
ability to make the legally required refunds.
Okay.
Okay. Are there any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Swoboda, for your time and your questions. We do, if you have any closing statements, you may proceed. Not quite as long as the opening, but we do allow you a summary if you'd like. Commissioners have no further questions.
Well, thank you, Commissioner. The only remarks I would make at the end of the day is really we would like the final audit report to reflect the committee's actual good faith, efforts to comply with the law. And I think that's important with the bus. I think that's certainly important with respect to the redesignation and refunds. And I think it's important with the brokerage account. We're certainly with, the brokerage account reporting, there's confusion and misunderstanding on the law with respect to the redesignations. I don't think that there's a question that we did what we needed to do under the regulations to dispose of these contributions. And with the bus, where we paid the person we were asked to pay. We would have preferred to pay them sooner, but we paid them when we did, and we tried to act prudently. So I would hope the Commission would consider that and would adjust the audit report language appropriately to make sure that we're not forced to deal with these issues in some other context later. And I appreciate the Commissioner's time.
Thank you. This hearing is adjourned.